And now, Lifestyles Unlimited presents the Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Over the next hour, we unfold your map to financial freedom. You'll learn how to retire through investing in single-family and multifamily real estate. You'll learn how to create cash flow and build wealth so you can have the time and money to live the lifestyle you want.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Andy Webb with Lifestyles Unlimited. And as always, we're working on your financial freedom. And I thank you for joining me today. Hey, if you have any questions as you meander down your real estate investing track, send those over to me at askandy@luinc.com. I'm happy to answer those mano a mano. It's just me replying to you. And if they're very interesting, something I think someone else could benefit from, I will bring those up on air as well. I do appreciate those questions. Again, askandy@luinc.com. And I hope you're having a great start to the year. I hope you're hitting the ground running, right, when it comes to those real estate investments. Now, we're going to look backwards a little bit today. I've got a fun show today for you. We're going to talk taxes, filing your taxes with the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS. Doesn't that sound like fun? Yeah. Look, it's going to be a party, a literal party. Who's coming to my party? Who's coming to your party? Well, it depends on you. But here's who's coming to my, let's call it, tax party. I'm going to have a host of 1099s show up. There will be 1098s. There's going to be a 1095, a 1065, lots of K1s, even a W-2, and probably some other oddballs to boot. Sounds like a lot of fun, right? Well, yeah, it is. For the real estate investor, taxes can actually be fun, believe it or not. So I want to talk taxes today. And I want to touch on some of those forms that I mentioned that you should be receiving when you become a real estate investor, just what they mean to you in terms of your cash flow, wealth building, some other things. And quick note, by the way, I am not a CPA. I am not a tax advisor. I am not a tax strategist. So be sure to talk with yours. I'm just somebody that's been doing this as a real estate investor for, a dozen years or so now. I've been a member at Lifestyles Unlimited since, coming up on 13 years, March of 2012, I became a member and started buying single family houses, investing in apartments as well. But back to the show today. Why taxes? Why today? Well, in case you missed it, the IRS opened its filing window recently on Monday, January 27th. So you can start filing your taxes for the prior year as of that date. This is a few days earlier than it was last year, in fact. So we're going to get that party started. Why a party? Well, if you're new to the show, never caught this show before, we're going to be talking about real estate investing. That's the main topic every day here on the program. And I'll tell you that as members at Lifestyles Unlimited, we're focused specifically on two asset classes within our real estate investing. We're looking at single-family rental houses, and we're looking at multifamily, at apartment. We're looking at residential. We're not looking at commercial. We're not looking at vacant land. We're not looking at RV parks. We're not looking at storage facilities. None of that. Just those two asset classes. Why do we love those? Well, we make money multiple ways. And there's always demand for housing, right? Think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We need air. We need water. We need food. We need shelter. There will always be demand for residential, but we make money multiple ways. Five ways on our houses. We share those five ways with apartments, and then there's a bonus way that we can make money with our apartments. But the big thing that I want to focus on today are the tax advantages, because those are a big part of that. Yeah, the cash flow. We got to see cash flow. That's one of the ways we make money. Always has to cash flow. We'll see equity capture, where we create wealth through the process very early on in the process. With our houses, for example, I may buy a house for $100K, do $50,000 worth of renovations, but it's worth $200 when I'm done. You can see the spread there. That's our equity capture. And we're going to rent these, and we're going to have debt on these. So over our hold period, we're going to watch as our residents pay the mortgage on our behalf, and we experience what's called equity buildup, right? That's the principal pay down that they're paying for me. And of course, there's market appreciation. Those are four of the five ways on our houses. There's forced appreciation on apartments. That's a whole other show. But for today's show, taxes. Lots of tax advantages. That's a big part of what we do. And we really see those advantages right now at tax time. Of course, you have to have taken steps in the prior year to enjoy the fruits of these tax advantages. And of course, maybe you're not filing immediately in April. A lot of investors I know do wait and file an extension. If there's time, I may talk about why we do that. So what are the deadlines for filing this year? Well, they already opened the filing window. Monday, April 15th, is the deadline for the regular filing window, if that's your plan. And then Wednesday, October 15th, is the filing deadline if you do file an extension. You know, let's talk about that real quick. Why might you file an extension? If you are a single family investor, this really comes into the discussion you may have with a lender. And I have this discussion anytime I have a project underway that I'm planning to refinance, or maybe I have an existing rental house that I'm planning to do a cash out refinance on. I'll sit together with my lender, my mortgage broker, and say, hey, all right, what should I do? Should I hold off on filing until after we do this cash out refinance? Why might they say to do that? Well, maybe there's something that's going to appear on my taxes this year that could in some way hurt my refinance in the eyes of the bank underwriter or whoever is issuing the loan, right? So they may say hold off, or they may say your tax filing from the prior year simply is better, right? Maybe we did a lot of investments in this year, this prior year that we're filing for, that's just going to muddy the water. Right, we bought five more single family rental houses. There was a lot of movement. There were losses, paper losses, by virtue of the fact that we did some massive renovations. You're going to see that in your first year. So that lender, that broker, whoever you're working with, may come back and say, "Let's hit the brakes. Let's just wait." And that's okay. That's okay. Sure, you may wait to get your refund back, but in the long run, if you can get that favorable financing, sometimes that is preferred. I'm going to have a tax party, and I'm waiting for all my guests to show up. And we're going to talk now through who those guests just might be for you, for me, maybe for others. We're going to hit some of those forms that you're going to receive. And to start with, well, who's the first one that's going to show up to your tax party? Well, it's probably going to be the good old W-2. Yeah, what is the W-2? Who sends it? You probably hear us talk about that W-2 job on the show all the time. This is for those that are out earning an income, working for an employer. Your employer sends you this, and it's supposed to be sent by January 31st. Right? Commonly, they're already ready to download very early. It's very quick these days. The W-2, it's also called a wage and tax statement. And it just shows what you earned, right, at the J-O-B, right, at the job. The past year, right? What was your gross income? What did you put away, you know, 401k, all that fun stuff that you do? How much in income taxes and Social Security taxes and Medicare taxes did they already take away from you, right? What was already withheld? And this is the position, ultimately, when you're listening to this show and we talk about financial freedom, this is the position we want to get you away from, out of that W-2 position where you are dependent on an employer. And actually, I'll tell you, this W-2 might be a really good benchmark for you. I typically talk about the fact that to achieve financial freedom, we want to match our household expenses, everything we're paying every month, we want to match that with inbound passive income. That's our cash flow from houses and from apartments. When we've done that, we're financially free because I don't have to now work to cover my lifestyle. As long as you're not living paycheck to paycheck and you're earning more than you spend every month, well, maybe that W-2 is actually a better benchmark for you. Be sure to look at the after-tax amount, because this is your target to replace, not the gross amount. Maybe you make that as a stretch goal, but why after-tax? Well, when you become a real estate investor, if you are doing the things we tell you, if you're doing it right, you will not pay taxes on your cash flow. So in order to compare apples to apples, I want to compare after-tax W-2 income to what my target will be in terms of cash flow. Now, I no longer get a W-2. Thanks to my real estate investments, I retired from corporate America a few years ago. My wife, on the other hand, and she retired years before me from corporate America, but she got bored. She got bored, and she went back to work part-time. She works for a hard money lender. She wanted to be in the industry, which we now devote our time to, real estate investing. So we do get that one W-2 every year. But again, as somebody that is financially free, this is her choice. This is something she chooses to do. And we do see that quite a lot. Investors get to the point where they've replaced their income. They could retire, but they actually love their job, right? They love the job. That's not a lot of us. So they stick around and they continue to work. That's a great thing too, by the way. If you've replaced or matched your income from passive income, passive investments, and you're still working, wow, you're going twice as fast. That's great. So you may get that W-2. We'll have that W. It's already showed up. It's ready to party. Yeah, let's go. Well, who's the first guest beyond that at my tax party? Well, I start to see the 1099 INT. 1099 INT. Well, what is that, 1099 INT? And who sends me that? Who sends you that? Well, you're going to get that from a bank or financial institution, anywhere where you've earned $10 or more in interest in the prior year. $10 or more. I have one account with a regional bank for my operations. They don't pay much, so I never hit that $10 threshold, right? So I don't get anything from them. Don't need to file, don't care. But everyone else, they're going to send you that 1099 INT interest, right, is what that stands for. But I'll tell you, it's interesting. It is important to remember. This is not a passive investment. Although I put my money into the bank and I forget about it until I need to deploy it, seems passive. It's not. You pay earned income tax rates on that interest income. There are no tax advantages there. So remember that fact when you get distracted and start to think about maybe I'll become a private lender. Let's start lending money to those investors, etc. Right? Now, I love my hard money lenders. I need them. But now, why would a real estate investor be getting a 1099 INT? Well, you've got liquidity that you've accrued through your investments. You've been investing for a while like I have. You've done cash out refinances. You've sold some property. You've capitalized on those massive gains. You've pulled that out, and now you have some liquidity, and if you've not yet deployed it, well, you naturally want to put that in a high-interest savings account, money market account, something like that, so that you're ready to strike when the next great apartment investment, the next great single-family investment comes along. Or, like I like to do for my single-family portfolio, you have a capital reserves account for your single-family portfolio. This is just money set aside just in case. Be sure that's in a high-interest account, as high an interest account as possible. I know those rates have been coming down lately. Beyond that, when you do go to do a refinance, whether it's out of hard money into long-term debt, or maybe you're doing a cash-out refinance, your lender wants to see reserves. Every time you add a property, that reserve amount is going to increase. Or you get that first house, you renovate it, you market it, and voila, you get it rented. And as part of that new lease, you're going to collect what is called a security deposit. And that's just something that you hold in escrow for when that resident moves back out. And if there are damages, you can charge against that security deposit, right? There are other instances where you may charge against that security deposit, but you want to keep that in a separate account. You do not want to commingle your funds. And in fact, when you get to multiple houses, well, now you start to see a decent income just from that security deposit account. Now, that check with your local state. If you're investing outside of, here I'm speaking to Texas, if you're in Tennessee, if you're in the Carolinas, if you're in Georgia, if you're in Arizona, if you're in Kansas, if you're in Missouri, all markets where Lifestyles Realty is present and we have members buying and beyond, be sure to check what the security deposit requirements are in that state, because they do vary. They do vary. But in Texas, I can put those into an interest-bearing account, and I keep that interest. You know, years ago, it's been over a decade now, I lived in Germany. We rented there. The landlord, the owner of the duplex that we rented, they had to put that money into an escrow account that was interest-bearing, and that interest was payable to us. It was a slightly different setup. So point is, markets vary. Of course, finally, if you do like I do, property tax and insurance, I escrow those myself. I do not want the lender messing with that, because I've had them mess that up in the past. The lender can collect that, right? But if you're able to manage these responsibly, you have a lot more options. You can escrow those. You can show those as those very reserves for lenders when you go to do that refinance, right, that we just talked about. You can lend those to yourself. I've done this in the past. Great opportunity came along, a little tight on finances over here. Grab, borrow from that escrow account short term. Obviously, pay it back in time. And you earn interest. We made a lot of money just in interest last year. So those 1099s, those 1099 INTs, a lot of 1099s out there, those should already be available to you from your bank, so you can see just how profitable you were on that side. And that's not even getting to the real estate investment part. We'll do that when we get back.
Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show returns in a moment. Got questions? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com.
Learn to retire in 5 years or less through real estate investing. Learn how, learn now. Let Lifestyles Unlimited show you how. Get educated now. Text the word radio to 88007. That's radio to 88007. Join for just $297. Lifestyles Unlimited.
Creating the lifestyle you've always wanted. You're hearing Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Andy Webb. If you have any questions, send those over to me at askandy@luinc.com, askandy@luinc.com. And I never thought I'd get this excited about filing taxes with the IRS. But yeah, here we are. Here we are. I've been doing this as an investor for over a dozen years now, and I've really seen the benefits, and I would like you to understand some of the benefits. And what we're doing today is just looking at those guests that are going to come to our tax party. I'm talking about the sundry statements and forms that you will get inundated with as your business grows. We talked about the W-2. We want to get you away from that. That's your job. We talked about the 1099 INT. You're going to get that for all the money that you're parking in between investments at banks, lending institutions, wherever you park that. But now let's get to those statements that are more related to your property business, whether that's single family or apartments. We're going to hit both of these. And as a single family investor, I've seen these come my way year after year, and their numbers have increased, and I want to see them continue to increase. And I'm talking about the 1098. That's the next guest that I will see at my party. And I should say dozens of 1098s. What is that? Who sends that? Well, the 1098 is the mortgage interest statement. So any lender to whom you've paid mortgage interest in the prior year is going to send you one of these. Now, interesting, I did not realize this until I was doing a little bit of research ahead of the show. This is required if that amount is $600 or more. So if you had somebody that had a very short-term hold, be sure you're accounting for that interest if it's below $600. I believe in the past I've seen those 1098s regardless of above or below. But keep an eye on that. And this is not just for your 30-year conventional notes. So remember what we're doing at Lifestyles Unlimited. We're going out and finding houses that need work. And typically, we cannot get that conventional loan on those properties due to the condition. So we will use something called hard money. It is simply a construction loan. It's a bridge loan. It is high interest. It is typically interest only. And in fact, every case I know of, it is interest only. So we get that house closed using hard money, and we start paying that interest only to that hard money lender for a couple of months. Get the work done, refinance out. You will also get a 1098 from that hard money lender for those very interest payments, origination fees as well. And the more houses you have, the more 1098s you'll receive. Now, why is this important? Well, we get to expense that mortgage interest against our rental income. And that can be a pretty big number, especially lately where interest rates have gone up. Your principal payment has gone down, right? That interest part of the equation has increased. Note that we do not expense principal payments, right? That's just changing the capital from one part of our balance sheet to another, going out of our bank into the reduction of that principal. And one caution to you, sometimes this is painful. You actually may receive more than one 1098 in a given year for a given property. Why is that? Well, loans sell, servicers, mortgage service companies change, right? Lenders change their business, whatever. So they sell the loan, especially after you've just closed on that property on that conventional note. That loan is newly originated. They're making their money on their origination fees, really, right? So they want to turn that stuff faster. So they may move the note on, sell the note, and go on to the next borrower. So you may get, in any given year, multiple 1098s. Now, here's the cool thing on the 1098. I told you we make money multiple ways, right? Equity buildup, which is the principal pay down that the resident does for me by paying my mortgage, essentially, every month. I can see that on the 1098. It's going to tell you, among other things, mortgage interest paid, obviously. It's going to tell you your beginning principal balance. It's going to tell you your ending principal balance. And it's going to tell you what the principal reduction was in between those two things. In fact, I've got one open here from my prior year. It tells me the mortgage interest, and it tells me the principal pay down, almost $5,000. That's great. On one house, that's money that someone else paid on my behalf. Equity buildup, one of the ways we make money. We can see it right there. Now, I track that separately anyhow, but boy, the 1098 is an easy place for you to go and see your progress for the year on each house. So that's the 1098. That's something that will apply to you that have single family. Maybe you buy a duplex and you put financing on that, quad, and so on. Now, when you do the other thing we like to do as investors at Lifestyles Unlimited and invest in apartments, and specifically as a passive investor, I want to speak to those that are investing in apartments passively or are planning to. Our tax party is in full swing already, right? We've got our 1099 INTs, maybe that W-2. We got those 1098s, some sundry other oddballs have shown up as well along the way. We're just waiting for those K-1s because they are the star of the party, and they tend to come later. Why is that? We love it when they show up. What is a K-1? Who sends it? Let's start there. And this is just from Investopedia. Schedule K-1 is an IRS form used by partnerships, S-corporations, and estates, trusts, etc., to declare income, deductions, and credits that partner shareholders and beneficiaries have received in the tax year. Individual taxpayers transfer that financial information on their K-1s to their personal tax returns. So for me as a passive investor in apartments, I'm not actively investing. I'm not a lead. I'm not a syndicator. I have not bought my own multifamily yet. For me as a passive investor in apartment syndications, I receive this tax form from the lead investor, from the syndicator, from the person that found the apartments, put the business plan together, figured everything out, solicited our investments, right? We know each other. We say, yeah, it looks good. I like you. I'm going to participate, right? They put that thing together. They're the ones that are going to issue those K-1s to you. Now, why are those K-1s showing up so late to the party? Well, the due date is later. IRS says due date for partnerships to issue that K-1 is March 15th. So even though they opened the tax filing window already, I can't do anything until my slew of K-1s get to my inbox, my mailbox, wherever they come. So you can see that they can show up quite a bit later than a lot of the other forms. Now, those K-1s themselves, they're not just created by themselves. They are actually spawned, let's say, from the partnership filing what is called a 1065. That's a partnership return, okay? Not so interesting. I don't care about that so much. We love those K-1s, and there are several reasons. And this is where, if you're considering investing in residential real estate and you're trying to decide, is it houses, is it apartments, you got to realize, as apartment investors, we have the opportunity to see some massive capital gains, both through equity capture, but more so through forced appreciation, where we improve the model, the business model, we improve the cash flow, the net operating income, and force up the value, because that's how the apartments are valued, based on their income, their net operating income. Can't call it cash flow, keep it simple. But we see some massive capital gains. You're going to see that represented on the K-1, right? Typically when you sell, there it is. But early on, what happens? I see losses. I look at my K-1, there's a loss. I look at the next one, there's a loss. I look at the next one, a really big loss, because we've done a cost segregation study. We've accelerated the depreciation. We've taken advantage of the bonus depreciation, which hopefully is coming back at full bore. And now we have this massive loss. The good news is that's a paper loss. Depreciation is a loss that the IRS allows us to take, both on our single family and on our apartments, when it comes to filing our taxes. It just represents the wear and tear on that building, those buildings, whatever it is, over time. But it creates one of the really big tax advantages for us as apartment investors, because we can pull these losses forward on this investment. And then when that one over there sells that same year, I've got a big capital gain, those offset each other. And we come away with no tax burden. Remember what I said, if you're doing it right, you'll pay no taxes on your cash flow. And that can include those capital gains. The really cool thing about being a member at Lifestyles Unlimited is that we are, 50,000 plus members strong. So there are thousands and thousands of members out there doing this stuff every day, living what we talk about, living what I do, right? Doing things in parallel. And they're out there figuring out new things, new tips and tricks. Now, we don't want you to go out and reinvent the wheel, but there are places where you might find some incremental improvement, let's say, or maybe big improvements. And two members from Lifestyles Unlimited here in Texas, anyhow, they got up recently and they taught an awesome class on, I don't remember the title per se, but essentially it was on how to pay capital gains rates on your earned income. Right? You may be a high earner paying whatever the top tax bracket is now, I don't know, 39%, whatever it is, but you could be paying capital gains rates of 15-20%. And they learned this, they figured this out as members. And they brought that back and they shared with the membership base. They taught a class. They used something they were calling the capital gain benefit. And it is beyond my abilities to explain that to you today. Okay. The good news for me is that that class was recorded, so I can and I will go back to our online portal to watch that and to re-watch that until I fully digested all the moving parts. But just an example of how you benefit as a member at Lifestyles Unlimited. But the really cool thing is, wow, the fact that I can turn my earned income tax rates into capital gains, if you're doing it right, the way these guys have explained that, is amazing. A further benefit that we see, again, with those K-1s and everything else we do as real estate investors. And those are my main documents that I tend to see. There are others out there. I do want to give you a quick sidebar on that 1065 that I mentioned. Again, that's a partnership return. So that syndicator on that passive apartment investment that I'm invested in as a passive anyhow, they're going to file that 1065 for the partnership that will generate those K-1s, right? Okay, Hold on to that thought. You are about to buy your first single-family rental house. You come to me. You say, Andy, should I form an LLC, a limited liability corporation? I had this question multiple times recently. I went out to the single-family road trip here in Dallas and got this from newer members multiple times. The answer is no. Don't go out and make it more complicated than you have to. Your fear, the fear that's behind the question, is that I could get sued, I could lose that house, I could lose all my assets. I understand the fear, but there's a better way to mitigate the risk that you perceive there. Number one, get educated. That will help you pull down a lot of the fear that you have here and in other places. And you'll learn things like what we talk about all the time, best product, best price. If you rehab the property properly, say that three times fast, the property properly, you'll have no issues with things like electricity, electrical, right? The plumbing, that wonky staircase that you should have fixed. You did fix it, so it's not an issue. Best product, right? Of best product, best price. You renovate correctly. You learn to screen well before you let somebody move into that property. You make sure you're not putting any bad apples into that property that may try to take advantage of something, not, you know, something minimal. And you manage well. A good operator will inherently reduce his or her risk just by managing properly. And that's also something that we teach you. And you can get good liability coverage. Commonly, we'll talk about an umbrella policy. And that's just like an umbrella. It sits over everything. It's very inexpensive. Maybe a couple $100s per year to get $1 million worth of umbrella liability coverage. Now, you may have to raise the liability on individual policies. For example, on a lot of my houses at the time, when we first got the umbrella policy, I had my liability set to $100,000. Well, in order to have that umbrella policy be effective, I had to raise those to $300 on each of my houses. That did drive a little bit of a higher premium. On my cars, we had to take our liability coverage to $500,000, right? So there'll be a little bit added cost there, but it's worth it. It's worth it. And I talked with a member about this recently. As you grow as an investor, and you will, your net worth will grow, then you should match that umbrella policy coverage to that net worth. So if you go from 1 million net worth to 2, take that up. It's as simple as that. But in addition to those fear issues, the notion of creating an LLC, it's an added layer of complexity. Now you need to create a business account if you're going to write checks to vendors. You need business credit cards if you're going to buy that stove at Lowe's. Don't do that in your personal name, because now you're commingling. And as soon as you commingle, well, now you've pierced the veil that protects you, that LLC veil. It's no longer serving the purpose that you intended that it serve. And then there's that pesky 1065 filing for tax time. So to the listener, to the members, to the people that ask, about to buy my first, my fifth, even my 10th single family house. No, you don't need an LLC. In fact, if you prefer to get the Fannie Mae financing, which are the cheaper rates, the best mortgage rates you're going to get, you cannot do that in an LLC. She will only lend to you in your personal name. Now, are there times when you will want or need an LLC? Sure. If you can't get Fannie Mae financing because you are self-employed and you take too many losses on your tax return every year, you may want to use something like a DSCR loan. That's a commercial product. And some DSCR lenders will only lend to an LLC. Others will lend to you in your personal name. So you have to think about that and maybe shop around. That's a case where you may need an LLC. Or if you're thinking ahead, my wife and I, we did open a property, create a property management company as an LLC, right? Thinking ahead to when we do find that multifamily independent property that we buy by ourselves, right? We're going to want to have that management company in place. But my CPA handles that. She files a 1065. I give her here. Income, expenses, I forget about it. But as a new or an early single family investor, message is this: do you need to form an LLC? No, you do not. Now, back to our tax party. We've just got a couple minutes left. Again, I've just hit some of the forms that you'll start to see coming into your inbox or into your mailbox when you become a real estate investor. There are many more. There could be many more depending on what else you do in your life, right? I mentioned the 1098. You should get that for your personal house as well to show the mortgage interest there. One other form that may show up is the 1095A. Now, when I was working, I always got this. It was intended to show when there was still a mandate in place for the Affordable Care Act around health insurance. That was intended to show that I did have cover. I think it was a 1095C, actually. It was intended to show that I did have health insurance coverage so I couldn't be penalized. Well, I'm no longer working. My wife is not at a, she's working part-time. We do not have health insurance through an employer. What do we get? Well, we've gone to the open market. People have different approaches, and this is a common question as well. What do I do when I retire? What do I do about health insurance? For now, we just go to the ACA, Affordable Care Act, healthcare.gov, whatever you want to call it. And as a result of that, I do get that 1095A every year, which shows the subsidies that I, yeah, killing it in real estate, getting subsidies for that health insurance coverage. And this shows what those subsidies were. There's a lot of moving parts that go into that and how that filters through into your tax return. That is a question perhaps for a health insurance broker, but that 1095 comes from whoever that healthcare provider is, health insurance company is, and that just shows the subsidies, and that's relevant for your tax filings as well. And that's a result of what we do as real estate investors. Because we're able to show such a low or no earned income, you're able to use some of the other tools that are out there, like subsidies for the healthcare. Lots more we could talk about today. I had Schedule E on my docket. That's where you actually file your single family houses. We're going to save that one for another day. And I just want to come back and just summarize for you, you know, why are we investing in residential real estate? The need is there. You know the need is there. Affordable housing in particular. We like to target that space. There will always be demand, and we make money multiple ways, five ways on our houses. There's cash flow. There's the equity capture because we buy right and buy at a discount. And we create that equity through the renovations. There's equity buildup. I see that on my 1098. As my resident pays down the mortgage, I get that principal pay down. Equity builds up, and then there is market appreciation, forced appreciation for our apartments, and then the tax advantages. And those tax advantages, we didn't even hit all the advantages, like the 1031 exchange, increased step-up basis, etc. But the tax advantages are a big one, and we really see that right now at tax time. And you will too. Go take some action. Go to lifestylesunlimited.com, check out our free workshop, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Lifestyles Unlimited's Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Ready for more of the map? Visit lifestylesunlimited.com. Explore our videos and articles. Click on the radio tab to access past show podcasts. View the radio show schedule and listen to our best of radio shows. Want to continue the conversation? Follow Lifestyles Unlimited on Facebook today. We want to meet you as well. Sign up for a free workshop at lifestylesunlimited.com. Until next time, remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle.
The information and opinions you hear on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show are those of the hosts, guests, and callers and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.